Meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:10 p.m. Saturday, April 27, 2019. Before we begin, I want to thank Robert Montenegro, the House Judiciary. Secretary, he makes sure we have sound, has a transcript of our meetings, and Taylor? Eileen? What's your last name? Keim. Eileen Keim from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Shaw, Representative Stutz, my vice chair, Representative Ledoux, and myself, Representative Clayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first and only order of business today is House Bill 49. Crime, Sentencing, Mental Illness, and Evidence, sponsored by the House Rules Committee by request of the Governor. This is the second hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. We have before us a proposed committee substitute, and my staff, Lizzie Kubitz, is prepared to explain the changes to the committee. Ms. Kubitz, if you would please come to the table, identify yourself for the record, and explain the changes. And as the usual custom, I would urge members to try to let her finish the explanation before beginning questions.
For the record, Lizzie Kubitz, staff to Representative Matt Clayman. We are looking at work order version M of House Bill 49. Sections 1 and 2 are conforming changes. Section 3 removes marriage as a defense if the person engages in sexual activity with their spouse when they know their spouse is incapacitated or unaware that the sexual act is being committed. Sections 4, 5, and 6 remove the word online from the crime of online enticement, criminalizing any enticement of a minor, regardless of whether the enticement occurs online. It also makes solicitation of a minor for sex a B felony. Section 7 is a conforming change. Sections 8 through 13 of the bill remove inflation adjustment from property crime statutes. Section 14 amends AS 1146-285, the statute related to fraudulent use of an access device, to include theft of an identification document. This section also restructures the offense levels to a Class B felony if the theft using an access device or identification document is $25,000 or more, a Class C felony if the theft is $75 or more and less than $25,000, and a Class A misdemeanor if the theft is less than $75.
And I note that Representative Kopp has also joined us.
Section 15 amends the application of prior convictions to apply to theft in the third degree in determining the existence of prior convictions in the recidivist theft statutes. Section 16 removes inflation adjustment. Section 17 adds a new section establishing the crime of possession of motor vehicle theft tools as a Class A misdemeanor. In addition, to mechanical tools used to unlock a motor vehicle, this section also includes an electronic unlocking device as a motor vehicle theft tool. Sections 18 through 23 remove inflation adjustment from property crime statutes. Section 24 allows prosecutors to aggregate crimes under theft in the second degree if they occur within 180 days, the amount is more than $750 and less than $25,000, and the property or services are taken from one or more persons or commercial establishments. Section 25 amends the second degree terroristic threatening statute to cover an individual who knowingly threatens to commit a crime against a person and recklessly disregards the risk that the threats will cause the evacuation of a building, will cause serious public inconvenience, or will place the public or a substantial group of the public in fear of serious physical injury. Section 26 creates an additional tier of drug offense, a Class A felony, for possession with intent to manufacture or deliver large quantities of Schedule 1A controlled substances, which include opiates and heroin, and Schedule 2A controlled substances, which include methamphetamines. The higher felony level for this controlled substance offense is directed at dealers and distributors and not at the possession level. Sections 27 and 28 are conforming changes related to Section 26. Section 29 also has conforming changes related to Section 26. Additionally, it establishes a basis to prosecute repeat offenders of possession of any amount of Schedule 1A or 2A controlled substances at the Class C felony level. Specifically, a person commits a felony if they possess any amount of a Schedule 1A or 2A drug and they have been previously convicted two or more times of drug possession of a Schedule 1A or 2A controlled substance, either as a felony or as a misdemeanor as described in the statute. You can see here that this section also provides a 10-year look back for prior misdemeanor drug possession convictions for drug offenses. Section 30, 31, 32, and 33 are conforming changes related to Sections 26 and 29 of the bill. Section 35 adds a new subsection A to read, a court may only grant credit for time spent toward service of a sentence of imprisonment under this section if the court finds that the sentence, including any credit toward the sentence of imprisonment, meets the requirements of AS 1255005. The reason this section has been changed is to make sure that all parties understand that the court has discretion in determining whether to grant credit for time spent on electronic monitor or in treatment towards service of a sentence. Specifically, before granting any credit, the court must consider and apply the sentencing criteria set forth in AS 1255005 and announced by the Alaska Supreme Court in State versus Cheney to the question of whether to grant credit for time spent on electronic monitoring or a treatment program. Section 36 increases the presumptive sentencing range for first-time Class B felony offenders from 0 to 2 years to 90 days to 2 years. It also adds enhanced felony sentences for making or possessing with intent to manufacture methamphetamine in a home or lodging where children live or engaging children in the manufacture of methamphetamine. Section 37 increases the maximum sentence for some Class A misdemeanors from 30 to 90 days, which is intended to give judges greater discretion in sentencing individuals. Section 38 increases the maximum sentence for some Class B misdemeanors from 10 to 30 days. Sections 39 and 40 are conforming changes, although I will note that inclusion of Section 40 in the bill might be a drafting error that could be subject to an amendment at a future date. Section 41 amends AS 1261050 by adding a new subsection directing the Department of Corrections to include in the victim notification system that victims of domestic violence or sexual offenses shall be informed of their rights to secure a protective order and that certain state victim resources are available to them. Section 42 is a conforming change related to Section 44 of the bill. Section 43 clarifies that a person may petition the Department of Public Safety for removal from the registry if the petitioner submits proof acceptable to the department that the facts underlying the conviction in another jurisdiction do not constitute a sex offense or child kidnapping in Alaska. Section 44 clarifies that a, and excuse me, this is relates to Section 44, which is next. Section 44 clarifies that a person who is convicted of an offense as an adult and required to register as a sex offender or child kidnapper in another jurisdiction is also required to register in the state of Alaska. Section 45 adds a person who is convicted of an offense as an adult and required to register as a sex offender or child kidnapper in another jurisdiction to the definition of sex offender or child kidnapper. Section 46 requires the Department of Public Safety to review procedures and adopt regulations to allow individuals with sex offense convictions in another state to petition for removal from the registry because the facts underlying the out-of-state conviction do not constitute a sex offense in Alaska. Section 47 is a conforming change. Section 48 repeals the requirement that a person serve their sentence for a first DUI on electronic monitoring or house arrest. This returns discretion to the Commissioner of Corrections to place the person on electronic monitoring at a private residence or at a community residential center. Section 49 has the same changes included in Section 48. This section relates to the refusal to submit to a chemical test. Section 50 requires that the pretrial risk assessment tool be verified by peer review, and that any future validation of the risk assessment tool is subject to peer review. Section 42 changes the minimum term of imprisonment in which the Department of Corrections must conduct a risk assessment and prepare a written case plan to 90 days. Oh, I apologize. Did I miss? Oh, I said four. I meant 52. 51. Did I say 42? Yeah. Apologies. I meant 51 when we were speaking to the risk assessment tool being subject to peer review. I apologize for that. Going back now to Section 52, this section also requires the Department of Corrections to coordinate with community reentry coalitions or other providers of reentry services when developing a written reentry plan for prisoners. And finally, it creates a new subsection that requires regular reports on offender management plan implementation. Section 53 is a conforming change. Section 54 adds a requirement that the Alaska Judicial Council include the data collected by the Department of Law in their annual report. Section 55 adds a new subsection K that requires the Department of Law to develop a method to track certain information and to report about sex offense complaints and disposition of those cases. Section 56 adds a new subsection B that requires the Department of Law to gather and report data to the Alaska Judicial Council on felony sex offenses, including the number reported but not referred for prosecution, the number referred for prosecution that were not prosecuted, the number prosecuted that resulted in a conviction of a crime other than a sex offense, and the number of crime victims that participated in the prosecution of and court process relating to the offense in which the person was a victim. Inclusion of this last section appears to be a drafting error that will be subject to an amendment in the future. It should be appearing in the above section related to the Department of Law. Sections 57, 58, 59, and 60 relate to sexual assault examination kits, requiring that within 30 days after collection of a sexual assault kit, it is sent to an accredited lab or Department of Public Safety operated laboratory facility, ensures that the sexual assault kit undergoes testing within 1 year, and within 2 weeks following completion of testing, there is a reasonable effort made to notify the victim that testing has occurred. These sections also require the Department of Public Safety to include additional data about which kits were ineligible for testing and why. Section 61 is a conforming change. And finally, the last few sections here. Section 62 is a direct court rule amendment. Section 3 provides the repealers related to removal of inflation adjustments. Section 64 has applicability provisions. Section 55 is a conforming change that relates to Section 52 of the bill. Section 66 provides conditional effects, and Section 67 provides for an effective date of July 1st, 2019.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? I don't see any questions. Let's take a brief at ease. Record, it's now 1:34 p.m. And Representative Wool, have you joined us online?
Yes, I have.
Representative Stutz, may I have a motion to adopt the committee substitute as our working document?
I have a question, Mr. Speaker.
There's a motion about to come forward. Go ahead.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. I move that House Judiciary Committee adopt the committee substitute to House Bill 49, Version 31-GH1029/M as our working document.
Object.
Representative Eastman, do you want to speak to your objection, or is that the question you wanted to raise?
Yeah, I'd like to. And I'm just wondering, why are we removing Section 49 from the bill?
Well, we haven't yet. But the provisions in Section 49 relate back. Well, I'm not actually. Section 49 in the bill relates to community residential centers. That's not an area that's being removed.
I'm talking about the bill as before us right now, before any changes. And we're currently removing Section 49, which deals with involuntary commitment, I believe.
I believe that those provisions were not added to the committee substitute because the issues of involuntary commitment are quite complex and probably need a lot more attention than could be given in the current timeline in this session. All right, so there's an objection to adopting the committee substitute. If you could please call the roll.
I think we have some comments.
Yeah, just to the objection, just speak.
Oh, okay, sorry. Go ahead, Representative Cobb.
I wanted to note that 49 sentencing is one of the governor's bills, that this has incorporated numerous specific requests from the law enforcement community. Over, I think, a dozen sections came directly from public safety, and more than that came directly from the governor's bill. It gives us a working document. There will be more amendments. We know we need a vehicle to improve crime, and this gives us a good starting point. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ledoux.
So I'm probably going to vote to move this CS, but I'm only going to vote this way because I can do the counting, and if we delay it, it's going to move on Monday anyway, so there's no point in delaying the discussion.
Mr. Right. Chairman, I assume that telephonic voting is permitted today?
Yes. I'm in committees, and I confirmed that with Ledge Legal during the ADEs.
Okay. I guess I just have a speaking to my objection then.
Oh, I thought you already did, but go ahead.
Thank you. So I'm concerned that we are now, if we adopt this committee substitute, we're going to be creating another monstrosity, and by that I mean another 40-plus page bill, which would probably be appropriately categorized as another omnibus crime bill. And it seems to me we already have too many of those. Probably, in my opinion, one is too many. But since we've already done that with House Bill 145, my understanding is that we, you know, intentionally didn't go that route in some other bills, and I thought that we had learned a lesson from what happened with SB 91 and all of the subsequent fallout. Even those who supported it had to support continual bills of revision because it was just so big. So I'll be a no vote because I see that we're grabbing from other bills and we're duplicating, and we end up with another monstrosity.
Thank you, Representative Eastman. Any other comments as to the motion to adopt the committee substitute as a working document? Hearing and seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Kopp.
Yes.
Representative Stutes.
Yes.
Representative Ledoux.
Yes.
Use your microphone here. Representative Wool.
Yes.
Representative Eastman.
No.
Representative Shaw.
Yes.
Chair Klayman.
Yes.
That's 6-1
yeas. So by a vote of 6-1, we have adopted the committee substitute for House Bill 49 Judiciary as our working document. I would propose that we next go to take up public testimony on this bill. We have some people, I believe, in the room as well as online. And we can start with public testimony. I will open public testimony, and we will start let's start with people here in the room today. Here in Juneau, I see Kathy Swanson.
My name is Kathy Swanson. I live in Juneau.
Good afternoon. Would you like to sit or would you rather stand?
No, I think I'll stand. Okay. I'm going to be brief. I'm really tired of telling this story by now, to be honest with you. I had a burglary in my home. I was out of town. Within 1 hour of getting back into town, I knew who did it and where my stuff was. But it took me 2 weeks and Andy Story's intervention with the police department to get a detective on the case. To make a very long story short, I'd like to invite you all over to see what they did to my home. I haven't seen it yet. It was February 23rd. I have not been in my bedroom yet. Maybe you would like to take a gander. While you're driving around town, bear in mind one of these sketchy individuals give you a funny look. Don't look funny back, because they've got my AR-15 and my .44 Magnum driving around with them. Now, I'm not a police officer. And I'm happy to let them do their jobs, and I'm happy to let you do your jobs. But I'm telling you, you're not doing your jobs with what's going on in Juneau. Half of the people don't even call to report burglaries anymore. It's not compassion to let these people shoot up drugs, throw the needles all over the playgrounds, and just enable them. They go into jail, right back out. No bond, no bail. No consequences. If you told your kid took a baseball bat to your house and you gave him a Snickers bar and said, don't do that again, and the next time you give him a Milky Way, you're going to need to do siding. I mean, it's common sense. Something really has got to be done before there's a youngster homesick from school or an elder in the bathroom that doesn't hear him come in, and we have a real tragedy on our hands. The amount of money that I lost in property, $30,000. That's not covered by the insurance company. So I don't know what kind of a class that would be, but it's a pretty big hit for me. Not to mention, most of what I lost cannot be replaced. My grandmother's dead, my mother's dead, my father's dead. They'll never give me those things back. And they're not worth any money. My grandma was a farmer. She had a watch. It's not worth any money. I'd like to buy it back. And I'm working on it. I'm still, because I'm not going to give up until it's solved, and particularly the firearms. I'm not going to give up. But I want you to know, because you spend some time here. These people, you're driving past these people too. Just food for thought. I really would hope that you would take that 145, seems pretty watered down to me, I don't understand, as a taxpayer, and I don't live in the low-rent district either, by the way. We have a very quiet neighborhood, but you probably didn't hear about the youngster finding a loaded pistol in his backyard.
Ms. Swanson, we usually limit testimony to 2 minutes. I've given you three. I'll give you about 15, 20 seconds to wind up, because I didn't give you the warning ahead.
You do the best you can and start putting people back in jail again. If they can't post bail, then they should stay there until their court date. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd note for the others testifying that we do put a two-minute limit on public testimony. Next on the queue is Bob Swanson.
Good afternoon. I'm Bob Swanson, Kathy's husband. SB 91 really hasn't worked as a social experiment. As far as, you know, the burglary goes, it was, and we have a guy that, you know, on camera, we call him Neck Tattoo Boy, and he's walking around on pretrial supervision with electronic monitoring, and he's going around robbing houses. So obviously 91 hasn't worked. I'm in favor of HB 49. Myself, what I do for a living is a substance abuse counselor. I believe firmly that there needs to be consequences tied to recovery. When people get into recovery, the first step in that intervention can be prison, and because there needs to be consequence tied to the crime of theft and all the other associated crimes that are involved with drug use. Just the other day, we saw two people robbing a truck, taking a bicycle out of the back of a truck and clothing articles. And we followed this person, called the police immediately, and the police didn't show up. Well, they probably had other things that were more important, but it just shows me these criminals are so emboldened that it's egregious what's going on in Juneau. Half the crime isn't reported in the Juneau Empire, and I believe that the community of Juneau doesn't know, and probably the state of Alaska does not really, really know how much crime is going on. I understand that there's a cost associated with incarceration of something like $21 million, but nobody can give me any data on property theft and damage. You can't prove a negative. And so I would just like to be in support of anything other that can give some serious consequences to crime and then move on and give people the help they need when they get into treatment and recovery. And certainly a first step of that would be prison. And I speak from the heart. I've been there and done that myself. And,
Mr. Swanson, you're a little past your 2 minutes. I actually have a question for you.
Sure.
What kind of, in your substance abuse counseling, is it alcohol and drugs, not alcohol, drugs only, alcohol only, what
no,
kind
alcohol
of?
Alcohol and drugs.
Both, okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, and so, I guess there's two things that Mark Twain said, people should never be let known how they are made, and that would be laws and sausage. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Next in the queue, Don Habiger. Mr. Habiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Again, Don Habiger, Community Coordinator for the Juneau Reentry Coalition. And the mission of the Juneau Reentry Coalition is to promote community safety by identifying and implementing strategies that increase reentry success for those returning to the community after incarceration. HB 49's approach to community safety is a broad brush stroke that includes increased lengths of incarceration. One fiscal note from the Alaska Department of Corrections estimates the cost impacts of these increases to be $37.5 million in the first year and $41 million in out years. This is an expensive, while seemingly ignoring the issue of prison population growth beyond our current capacity to hold. HB 49 does not seem to address the need for new facilities to accommodate this growth, other than to offer an out-of-state prison solution. Just one issue with an out-of-state prison solution is the likely breakdown of pro-social community connections and the likelihood of exacerbating a successful community reentry process, leading to a sustained high community recidivism rate. and continued issues with high rates of community crime. The Juneau Reentry Coalition supports addressing our community's public safety issues through a continued emphasis on access to mental health, housing, employment training, and other services and treatment that aid reentry and success in that return to our communities. Using a more targeted approach to adding enforcement tools for our law enforcement component and avoiding broad brush approaches such as HB 49 is our preferred solution.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue is Noah Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm here mainly because in 2017, a friend of mine was raped and never saw her case get justice. And she did everything right, if there's a way to do things right after that. She filed a report with JPD, was administered a rape kit, et cetera. I'm not going to use any expletives, but the guy who did it got off scot-free and over the next 2 years continued to harass her, like, around Juneau. So I empathize with, you know, the urge to enact harsher criminal penalties. I think this guy should be in jail till the cows come home. And I appreciate some of the provisions of this bill, such as the one which mandates the victims of sex crimes be informed of their rights, and the provision that requires testing within a, you know, short time period for the rape kits. But when it comes down to it, historically, tough on crime laws which focus on harsher sentences haven't worked. We try this in the 1990s on a national level and here in the 80s. And then eventually, some of the most brutal criminal gangs came up from down south because prisoners who had been incarcerated at prisons down south were forced to join those games or coerced or chose whatever it was. And that didn't help things. And so what I'd like to ask you to focus on is providing resources to district attorneys, et cetera, to make sure, like, we know the number one disincentive to commit crime is the threat of confirmed punishment rather than the threat of the weight of a punishment. If people believe that they're likely to be caught and prosecuted successfully, they're less likely to commit crimes versus if they believe they're not likely to be prosecuted successfully and there's a strict punishment attached with that. So please focus your – I'd like to ask to focus your efforts on providing resources to district attorneys to make sure that these convictions actually go through. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Looks like Representative Eastman has a question. Wait. Don't go yet.
Thank you. And through the chair, so I appreciate what you're saying, and I'm curious if you wouldn't recommend – looking at the severity of a sentence, how would you go about, or how would you recommend we go about determining what a sentence should be?
You know, admittedly, my expertise is not particularly in criminal justice, and I'm not inherently saying anything against making sentences more severe in this instance, especially because I'm talking about particularly for, like, heinous crimes. What I am saying is I also want to make sure that a lot of that the majority of the effort is put into making sure that the convictions happen, because I've seen, not just in my friend's case but in several other cases, people just getting off because their convictions didn't go through, and I would rather that those people were, you know, successfully prosecuted today. So I don't think we're necessarily opposed, you know, on the issue of sentencing. It's just I would like there to be focus placed on making sure those convictions do happen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next is Nola Lampkin.
Nola Lampkin, Juneau. Thank you for holding this meeting today.
Welcome.
I am very concerned about the privatization of criminal justice, because I don't think that the private sector has any interest in justice. And situations can get very bad there. I think that these issues, crime needs a gradated, not just, there needs to be gradations of convictions so that people just can't shrug off their crimes. And I mean, what else are you going to lop at them? You've got to have something to make, as if people are going to get worse, they've got to have something worse to throw at them, or else it's not going to make any difference. And that's one way to deter repeat offenders, and we need to have situations in the jails where they get some glimpse of some other way of life, not sending them outside to where they get exposed to an even more criminal element and be forced to get into gangs and have no light at the end of the tunnel, no hope. And I know these are hardcore people that, you know, you might not think right at hand there, but they're still human beings. And it has been proven that there is ability to reach through and help them to recognize their own humanity. These courses, for instance, that offer, you know, like they're doing right now a little bit in writing and different things, they just learn a whole different perception of life from it, and this is how we can stop the crime. You know, you don't just keep blasting people like in private jails. You don't just keep bopping them on the head and expect them to reform. You've got to show them a different way. If you're no better than, if you're not showing any better
Ms.
side
Ms. Lamb,
of yourself.
Ms. Lamb, can you try to limit it to 2 minutes? I've given you a little extra time. Can you conclude
already,
your remarks?
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I say back up the police departments in court and don't let just people, don't shrug it off so we can stop the crime and no privatization and gang exposures outside. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We don't currently have anybody else in the queue here in Juneau. We'll next turn to the Anchorage LIO, Michael Berger. Mr. Berger, can you hear us?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Please proceed to state your name.
Okay, my name is Michael Berger. I'm here representing myself and the people on the street who couldn't be here today. I got here and, first of all, I am against the changes that the proposed bill was for. I hear what everybody's saying today, and being that I did 20-plus years on the installment plan in prison in Alaska and two other states, a little truth needs to come forward. Number one, in prison, nobody's really forced to join gangs, not as you see it on TV. Not only that, but going out of state is probably the worst thing that happened to people, and it wasn't because of gangs or anything else. It was because of the supervision that there was none of, and the fact that you're talking about $11 an hour officers that are running. Okay. Also, instead of maybe looking toward changing Senate Bill 91 and, you know, looking toward making things harsher on criminals, look toward education a lot earlier in life. Because by the time most people get to where they are, and by the time they're incarcerated, I got to tell you the truth, it's probably too late for many people. And, you know, education earlier in life would help. You know, substance abuse is the main thing. I've heard estimates between 40%, 60%, 90%. Well, I got to tell you that probably 98%, 99% of the people that are committing crimes or being put in prison, they're the ones that have substance abuse problems. And treatment right now, the way it stands, is not helping that. So a better education system earlier in life will probably be the best way to make some solutions for the future. Because right now, the way things are, there really are no solutions. More time, less time, it doesn't matter. You're still going to have the same thing. People are going to get out and they're going to be just as many crimes, and it's going to keep increasing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next from the Anchorage LIO is Sid Atwood. I'm not sure whether I'm not going to guess. Sid Atwood, if you could state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Clayman and the committee. My name is Sid Atwood, and I am a member of the State Advisory Board on Drug and Alcohol Abuse. I'm here testifying on my own behalf. The main thing that I want to press is, and in fact, the SB 91 did have some positive effect. There were reasons in SB 91 that recidivism did decline since then by 5%. The problems that SB 91 had need to be straightened out. We didn't have the places for people to go, the programs in place, and we want to save lives. We want to save the lower the crime rate, and in so doing, we need to make sure that people don't recidivate. Now, very quickly, I'd like to give you a little bit of my background, and that is that as a young man, and having need for alcohol in my case, I get into trouble, and I spend a little bit of time inside. But what got me turned around was not jail and more jail and more to be prosecuted, but to have that, to have support, and I belong to a fellowship that is spiritual in nature, and I get to meetings all around the world, and I really do say that therapy and treatment can really save money. Let's spend money on that instead of more jails, and certainly keep people at home and not out of state. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Next, that's all I have in the Anchorage LIO. Next, I have on the online Kara Nelson. Ms. Nelson, can you hear us?
Yes.
Please proceed. State your name for the record.
Okay. For the record, my name is Kara Nelson, and I am a Juneau resident representing myself currently in California in school. I'm still a resident. I just want to thank you, House Judiciary Committee, for hearing the testimony on this very crucial subject. I was actually sitting here listening to the amendments and thought I was on the wrong testimony line, because I've done that before. Because it does seem like now we have an omnibus bill, and it's just interesting because I was really generally opposed to the crime bills, but I found it pretty honorable that they were taking the time, and we were all taking the time to make sure that we got everything in order to make sure that we do the best for Alaska. I'm in opposition of HB 49, and even though I haven't had enough time to really understand the changes that have been made, I was opposed to it beforehand, so I'm going to just take a different route since seems to have changed a bit. But I'm actually a woman in long-term recovery, and what that means to me is I haven't taken a drink or a drug since June 1st, 2011, so I have 8 years almost coming up, and I'm also formerly incarcerated. I'm a mother. I'm a lifetime Alaskan. I'm a survivor of rape, domestic violence, violent crime, and I've also survived the punitive measures for treatment for treating substance use disorders through incarceration, probation, parole. And I say all that because it actually allows me to be an expert in many areas in our justice reform and also in the solution, because I've been able to use all those dark and ugly years of my life to bring freedom to so many. And so it's not that I don't care about our state having safety. Of course I do. I have three adult children who are still navigating that, and also navigating having two parents that were in that punitive cycle trying to get help for their substance use disorders. But I also know that we can do it, and I've seen it with my own two eyes, the success of having smart justice, holding people accountable, not putting it all in the Department of Corrections, but actually...
Ms. Nelson, you're at about a little past the 2 minutes. I did have one question for you, and I'm not sure if other committee members do, and then I'll let you conclude. Actually, why don't you go ahead and I'll give you a few seconds to conclude, and then I'll ask my question.
Okay. I just hope that we continue to understand that what we've been doing for decades isn't working, and we're going back to that. That's just doing the same thing, expecting different results. It's insane. Thank you.
So Ms. Nelson, my question, because I sometimes my memory isn't perfect, but have you been involved here in Juneau with Haven House, and have you appeared in prior years testifying before the committee when you weren't down south in school?
Yes, I was the director of Haven House Juneau for 5 years.
And can you just tell the committee a little bit more about Haven House for those that may be newer to the legislature and may not know the work that House did?
Haven House is a faith-based recovery residence for women who are coming home after incarceration. It's a program that we have inside the home. We work very closely with probation and parole, and we work very closely with these new sanctions that were put into place with SB 91 as well. Prior to that, we also saw how inconsistent, you know, families being ripped apart. We work with children, you know, really with family reunification, recovery, reentry, employment, education, you name it. Peer support is huge. Being able to have someone that's been formerly incarcerated also go into the prisons, that was huge, because it wasn't just the people living in the home. We extend our services to any and everyone who needs help.
And then the other question I have is, just so I understand, is your testimony that you saw some of the changes of the justice reform, including Senate Bill 91, absolutely, actually made it better for the treatment absolutely you were trying to provide at Haven House?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
And just as a peer support provider in general.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next in the queue is Philip Shanahan, calling from Anchorage. Mr. Shanahan, can you hear us?
Thank you, Chairman Clayton, and members of the committee. I'm calling on my own behalf. I've been a lawyer in Alaska.
State your name, please. State your name,
please. Phil Shanahan. Phil Shanahan, Anchorage.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I got on the phone initially after reviewing HB 49, the version that was published back in February, and I had very different thoughts about that than I do about potentially the committee substitute that I heard discussed at the beginning of the hearing. Although the last speaker, Ms. Nelson, used a great phrase that I wrote down as I was sitting and listening, and that's smart justice. I think the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission put a lot of effort into research and using evidence-based approaches to dealing with our criminal justice reform efforts. And Alaska is not alone in seeking to reform the criminal justice system. Other states have done it, and it's shown to be successful, but it takes patience, and it takes some tweaking of things. It obviously takes some corrections here and there, and nothing that as big as SB 91 or any other bill that the legislature passes that involves lots of issues, it can't be done perfectly the first time. But the approach I saw in the original version of HB 49 was essentially to go all the way back to what we did for 20 or 30 years that led to high recidivism rates, high crime rates, people being incarcerated away from their families in Arizona or in Colorado because we couldn't afford to keep them in prison here. So while some of the committee substitute sections, I think, eliminate a lot of that, I do have some concerns about a few of the provisions I've sent. I sent an email about HB 145 because I wasn't able to testify the other night. But one thing we've heard today, and I think is important, is about rehabilitation and recovery efforts. Substance abuse treatment is crucial. SB 91 initially thought we would be spending more money on treatment and more money on getting people help. That I don't think ever really happened. We didn't give it time to happen. And I'm concerned some about the committee substitute provision about...
Mr. Shanahan, you're at about the 2 minute and 15 second mark. If you could conclude your remarks, that would be great. And you're also welcome, if you want to submit written comments, which we'll make sure get circulated.
I think I'll end up doing that, just to touch on a couple of things. But essentially what I'm asking the committee to do, and I think what the legislature should be thinking, is to continue to fix what needs to be fixed in SB 91, but let's not go back to what we know did not work forever. Many, many, many years it didn't work. Let's keep focused on making our society safer, but doing so in a more economical manner where we're not wasting money that doesn't save anything.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Next is Jean Gerhardt Cyrus. Can you hear us?
Hi. Yes, I can. Thank you. For the record, my name is Jean Gerhardt Cyrus. I'm from Kiana, and I'm testifying today as a parent and community member. I do a lot of work in the field. I serve on the Gov's Council. And something I hear throughout my work a lot is that the criminal justice system is the biggest provider of mental health services in the state of Alaska. And we need to turn that around. The biggest provider should be at the lowest level, which is in our communities where our people live. The highest percentage of people incarcerated are those with behavioral health issues, with traumatic brain injury, or with fetal alcohol exposure. And listening to and looking at this HB 49, those are the people that are going to be incarcerated longer and sent out of state more. And they're the people that need the most help in getting through the system and getting into treatment and having treatment that's appropriate to meet their needs. People that understand how brain injuries work. People that understand how fetal alcohol affects the brain and that it's not three strikes and you're out, because you need to work differently with people whose brains work differently. It doesn't sound like it's cost savings. It sounds like it's going to increase the cost of basically warehousing people and punishing people for having disabilities. And I think we need to get away from that. Violent crimes have been going up, but they've been going up before SB 91, and we need to fully invest in SB 91 so that we can provide the changes. I really appreciate what the speaker just said. You know, we do need to fully implement it so that we can get away from just incarcerating people longer, and certainly I am against privatization. And I believe that is the bulk of what I want to say, that put our money where we can help people. We want people to be contributing members of society. Then that's what we need to work on, not warehousing people. Thank you very much for this hearing, and I hope you take it to heart.
Thank you very much. Next on the line is Nuria Clark on the phone. Ms. Clark, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, please.
I apologize. I'm actually working on laundry as well.
That's okay. Please state your name.
Noria Clark, the November Alpha Romeo Indy Alpha, West Wing Charlie Lima Alpha Romeo Kilo. Yes, I would like to testify on my own behalf. In regard to this bill, I am somewhat conflicted in certain things. The woman who just spoke before us, or before myself, I understand where everybody's coming from, and I actually grew up in Arizona, so I understand exactly how the prison system works there, and it is a privatized system. I don't think that it's going to be a good thing for us to continue to have the Department of Corrections be the people who are in charge of handling mental health. You know, the reason we went away with mental health as privatized institutions was because we unfortunately found that they were experimenting on people. I think that we need to try and figure out where there's a balance to these things. And I don't feel like money is being saved. So far, there has not been able to have any documentation that is real documentation as to where money is being saved. And so what can we possibly do to work towards a better, greater good of Alaskan citizens and to us as the United States of American citizens? And I think that is, sometimes people have to be locked up, even if they have, unfortunately, if they have mental health disabilities. I don't think that the way that we're doing it is proper. I don't think that the Department of Corrections necessarily has the exact training that they should have when it comes down to it. You know, they're just trying to work on what they possibly can at the moment. And so for me, what I think that we can possibly do in regards to this is, do we need to try and save the law-abiding citizens? Yes. Will it come at the sake of other people? Maybe so. Can we try and figure out something different to work towards their benefit, where they can actually get the help that they need? Absolutely. You know, none of us are as stupid as to think that we cannot fight towards something that we need. And what we need is a safer and a greater place. And if we decide to stop fighting against each other and we decide to work in a collaborative effort, I think that we'll find the movement that we can make will be for the greater good.
Ms. Clark, you're a little past the two-minute timeline. I'll give you a few seconds to conclude.
Thank you, sir. And Mr. Clayman, I'm sorry that I got aggressive towards you. Actually, that's one of the only things that I want to say, is that I'm very sorry that I had chosen out of emotion, as opposed to the logical side of my brain, I had chosen out of emotion to be so angry. You and I may not see eye to eye on every issue, and that's okay. However, I think that we do really try to work towards the greater good of our great state. We are the best state in the union, and we are the only state that is worth saving to a certain extent. This is coming from a person who grew up in Illinois and Chicago, Illinois, and also in Southern Arizona. So, Mr. Clayman, I am sorry for being rude to you, and I hope that you will try and keep Alaskan's best interest at heart. And I appreciate that all of you are trying to figure out the best way to do this. Please keep us, the public, informed.
Ms. Clark, thank you very much. I knew you were having some strong feelings earlier, and I certainly didn't take them personally, but I really appreciate the apology, and I do share your commitment to putting Alaska first. And although I'm not sure I'm ready to say the other 49 states don't deserve as much work as we try to put into our state, but I also know that our state is the most important to all of us. But thank you for taking the time to
Absolutely,
join us today.
Sir. And we still have a chance. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see anyone else online except Mr. Duxbury, who's only here for questions. And I don't show anyone else in the room that has signed up. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 49. Are there questions of the committee in terms of what is in the committee substitute that we'd like to discuss this afternoon? I see no one raising hands, so we will plan to, we of course will continue to hold the bill for further review, Representative.
You haven't asked for comments yet, have you?
Well, usually we don't ask for comments until we're closer to concluding our work on the bill. If you want to make a comment before I go on to planning amendments, I'm happy to hear comments. All right, plan is to adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Monday, April 29th at 1 p.m., when we will take up amendments to House Bill 49, the bill that we have just heard. If anyone is considering amendment to House Bill 49, we are setting the deadline for amendments for House Bill 49 at 10 a.m. on Monday. Now, I know it's Saturday, and I know we're going to be submitting requests to Ledge Legal. If you get communications from Ledge Legal and they say this is a challenge and we can't get them by 10 a.m., don't call my office at 10:01 and say we had problems. It means call our office, get a hold of Lizzie. You can talk to me if I'm there. Let them know that you're having problems. We'll check with Ledge Legal, and we will coordinate an extension on the 10 a.m. for folks that have gotten amendments in a timely manner, and we will do everything to accommodate those, given the schedule that the legislature is on and the interest in moving forward with justice bills. My expectation is that we will take up amendments. If we need to start a little later to accommodate Ledge Legal, we will do that, but work for the 10 a.m. deadline, and if necessary, we will continue into the evening Monday night to get through all those amendments. So with that, we will adjourn for the day. It is 2:15, 2:16 p.m., and we are adjourned.